always hard to see a family member's lifestyle deteriorate, especially if they have been in the family home for decades and can no longer look after themselves the way they did in the past. It's even harder not knowing where to turn, dealing with all the emotions, the differing family wants, and the financial concerns of any transition that may occur. Are they ready for aged care, or is that still a little extreme? Sometimes you need to get the right person on your side to help you make that decision. And today, we are going to help show you you can make that decision easy.
You're listening to Real Estate Right. Top experts talk about how to buy, sell, rent, and invest right. Your host is Sue Langdon.
Do you struggle with the property manager who doesn't represent your property in its best light? Are you a property manager who is sick of writing the same thing for every property you need to advertise? For the price of around one-third of a week's rent, Real Copyright is here to help you get your property management advertisements targeting the right tenants, ensuring you are giving prospective tenants the right information for them to make an informed decision about your property. Call us on 5977-8889 to see how Real Copyright can help. With 16 years of first-hand experience as a registered nurse in the aged care sector, Naomi Anderson is the Managing Director of Aged Care Ready, a fiercely independent company that assists elderly clients and their families navigate their aged care journey. Passionate about helping families make educated decisions for their elderly loved ones, Naomi and her team are often described as buyer's advocates for aged care. Welcome, Naomi. How are you today?
I am so well. Thank you for having me, Sue. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. It's great to have a different perspective on real estate happening today. So we're looking at the aged care side. So there's so many homes that I go into where, you know, people have made that decision to get their elderly family member into a home, or, you know, you go to the homes where the bathrooms have been completely transformed into almost like a hospital bathroom, the easy access, like the non-slip floors and all that sort of stuff. You've obviously come from a registered nurse background. So what made you see the gap as an aged care nurse to help people who were struggling with a decision with what to do with their elderly loved one?
Yeah, well, like you said, at the time, I was a nurse, I'm still a nurse at the moment, and I was working in a medium-sized aged care facility. And to cut a long story short, there was an incident that had occurred when a new resident was admitted into the home that was clearly way too high care for that particular wing. It was a low care wing. And there was no one there to help the family make the right decision because it was very clearly the wrong decision, which ended up costing that elderly person their life, unfortunately. So there was an incident that occurred that just really made me feel like these families need some form of advocacy.
Yeah, some support, because, you know, there's so many things that we do in life that, you know, you do it once in life and that's it. And
And it's such a foreign concept. Until you need to go through that, you would never even think about it.
I know. Parents in their 70s and you're starting to see little changes. Do you know what I mean? And you're not quite sure. You know, just you cautiously worry. That's all. So, yeah. Anyway, talking about signs, what signs should we be looking for in either, you know, obviously your parent, aunt, uncle, grandparent, to determine if you should be making a change to their residential situation?
I think here it's really important to outline that for an elderly person, it's always best to keep them in their own home for as long as possible, as long as it's safe to do so, and their care needs are being met. If, for example, that is no longer possible, that's when we would consider moving them into a residential aged care facility. But in terms of signs and symptoms, it's very similar to what you just mentioned, that you start to like notice these tiny little things. And sometimes it's like the frog in the boiling pot situation.
Yeah.
That it happens over time and it happens gradually, that as a family member, it's not always easy to recognize. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess one of the most obvious things for us is that if they're under a home care package, so that means that they're receiving home care and they're receiving home help and support.
That's usually from the council, isn't it?
Yeah, either council or the government, depends what assessment they have been allocated.
Yes.
If they are utilising all their available funding and they're still needing support, that can be a huge sign that they need more support than what they're actually getting, and they're deteriorating. But outside of that, so more, you know, less obvious ones that are still obvious can be withdrawal from usual activities. So, for example, if they were really social once upon a time and they would go out visiting with friends or have weekly catch up at the club and now they're not, that can be a really good indicator that things are slipping.
Mm-hmm.
A deterioration in the appearance of their home or themselves, so no longer able to tend to their cleaning or their own hygiene. And what goes hand in hand with that is often weight loss and things like that. So even if they're receiving Meals on Wheels and you're finding lots of meals left in the fridge or even being stored incorrectly, you know, their appearance will reflect their mental state. And weight loss is probably one of the biggest ones, the first indicators that people will realize about their elderly loved one. And then also things like frequent falls that are happening is a relatively big sign, and also wandering outside of the home at any given time of day or night.
Yeah. So it's sort of keep in touch with your parents, neighbours.
Absolutely. Yeah,
have a phone number for your neighbour just in case they notice something a bit out of place. Yeah,
absolutely.
Good option. Yeah. Now, what options are there from going from total independence into aged care? As you did mention before, you know, there is home care available from the council or the government. So, you know, obviously we go from, you know, mum and dad or mum or dad going, you know, living their life like they have over the last, you know, 50, 60, 70 years to what's next would be the home care.
Yeah. So there are two different forms of home care. There's the Commonwealth Home Care Support Program, which is subsidised by the government, and that's provided by the local council through two home care packages, which is federally funded. Yeah. And the difference between those two is the level of care that your elderly loved one needs. So if they just need something like, for example, helping with cleaning the home, or doing some shopping or some gardening and things like that, it's relatively low level. That's where you would go to the local council and have that subsidized. Whereas if they're needing a little bit more personal care, a bit more interaction on a weekly basis, right through to, you know, daily care, that's where you would be implementing a home care package. And these home care packages can also be utilized in like independent living units in a retirement village or service departments if they need a little bit more support. And then after that, you're really looking at aged care facilities themselves, and they also differ in the amount of care that they can provide as well.
Yeah, because you can get some like retirement homes, if you like, that have the panic button buzzer in the space, as you know. So they've got this independent living, but this little security blanket of a panic button if there is an issue. And then and obviously, as you said, you can go into, you know, the aged care space where they have their private room, or then they have more of a nursing home kind of facility where they're in a room with many people and they've just really got a bed. That's more palliative care maybe, or...
Yeah, so we would consider that high-level care. Aged care facilities is really the new term for nursing homes. And the step before that, I would probably consider the service departments within a retirement village. So you've got your independent living units, which are very independent still. That's your own home. They're usually one or two bedrooms, sometimes three. And then your next level up from that is your service department. So that's where you get your cleaning, your food sometimes as part of the agreement. And then you can also leverage your home care packages to assist with that as well.
Yeah. All good. What if my loved one needs more support than they're getting from their home package, but not quite at that point where they need to go into the aged care facility?
So there are a number of options that a lot of people don't realise that are out there. And families can leverage, firstly, are they actually receiving the right level of home care package? Are they assessed at the right level? So one thing to consider is that there are four levels of home care packages. So if your loved one is only assessed or allocated at a level one or two package, is it worth actually being reassessed for a higher level package? Mm-hmm. And understanding here that there are wait times associated with this. Mm-hmm. Secondly, are they in a position to be able to self-fund some extra care? So this can be directly through the home care provider that they already have in place, who's helping them with their home care package. Next, you could consider respite, whether that's day respite or if it's a short stint over a couple of weeks. Sometimes all they need is a little bit of, a holiday almost that they just need to recoup and then reset and they'll be okay. And, you know, if this isn't a viable option, then you're really left with two other options. Again, service departments while still utilising your home care package. And then also you can consider the lower level aged care facilities. So that is like a nursing home, but there are some facilities out there that have the lower care wings, which predominantly support more social activities. Plus they also have, providing of meals, cleaning and care assistance if they need it as well.
Yeah, nice. Now, what type of resistance do you find families get from their loved one to go into an aged care facility? Because I guess it's a really hard one for them, isn't it?
This is a really, really big concern for a lot of our clients. And I guess the biggest challenge that we find that families face is the guilt of having to put their loved one into care. Their loved one, you know, has always stated something along the lines of, I will never go into a place like that. You know, how could you put me here? And so
I've heard those, I'm leaving this in a cardboard box or, you know, wooden box or whatever it is. Like, they don't want to ever.
But, I mean, times have changed and aged care has changed significantly since they would have seen it last with their parents, if they ever put their parents in care. And, I mean, people are living a lot longer than they were. And with that, we see the cognitive changes that we weren't seeing in the other generations like they would have with their parents. So they have a real big misconception of what aged care is like now. The biggest pushback from the elderly person themselves usually happens in the first 4 to 6 weeks after being placed into a facility, which is what we call the settling period. And during this time, their loved one or the elderly person could really complain about a lot of things, from care to food to other residents to, you know, other family members if you have siblings. It's really important to give them time to adapt. And most of the time we find that people will settle once they get to know their staff and their co-residents, and then they begin to flourish because they're receiving the care that they actually need to receive.
Yeah, and I think that is the tricky part. You know, like, the older we get, the more resistant we are to change. It's just human nature, isn't it? And
especially if they feel like they're losing that sense of independence. And we find it the most when they're just beginning to lose their cognitive ability. So there's a bit of dementia settling in, there's, you know, a bit of short-term memory loss, and they're not necessarily in denial, but fiercely trying to protect their independence.
And that it is, it's the fiercely protecting.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, yes, I know all about that. That's for sure. Now, after the break, we will talk to Naomi about what happens when you make that decision to get your loved one into aged care. You're listening to Real Estate Right, and we have the lovely Naomi Anderson from Aged Care Ready to talk to us about organising aged care for your family member. Now, I think there is this misnomer that all aged care facilities are the same, but they're not, are they?
Absolutely not. If they were, I'd be out of a job. You know, there are so many different types of facilities out there that cater to different needs. So it really comes down to the individual and what they're after, what their needs are.
Mm. Yeah, I've had the conversation with my partner a few times. He's very he goes, if he never met me, he would be so looking forward to the retirement village and just getting out there, having a few different girlfriends going on. Like, you know.
It happens all the time.
Oh, sure it does. And he's like, damn, you've stuffed up that dream. Like, you know,
I feel good on you.
Dream now. Yeah, so there is, I guess, a changing dynamic in, I suppose, acceptance for people maybe, you know, our age, like in the 40s, that, you know, that we can see that it's more like a resort. It's like a holiday every day, isn't it, for some?
Well, some aged care facilities themselves look like hotels.
Yeah.
Like, I tour them and I'm like, when can I move in? This is great. I'll have someone to make my food for me, someone to clean my room, do my washing. Yep. Brilliant.
All those activities are organised for me. Yeah, there's lots going on. And they do make you feel very welcome, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what different types of facilities are there for our loved ones catering for our different needs? So as we just sort of discussed, like a retirement village, you know, can be like a resort, like a holiday every day. Where would we go from there, that stage?
Yeah. So there are so many different types of facilities and there are no two facilities that are alike. Mm-hmm. Some even specialise in different ailments such as dementia, for example. Yeah. Actually, just yesterday I met with a facility that has a wing dedicated to deaf people.
Oh, wow.
And so all the residents in that area have a hearing impediment and all their staff are fluent in Auslan. And I think that's so amazing.
Yeah.
Because like the facilities, they're very individual, but so are all the people that are going in there as well. So they may need differing levels of care. They may have different lifestyle and leisure or cultural requirements. And there are facilities that cater to those individuals depending on what they need. And the pricing structures are all different. The look and feel of the facilities all differ as well.
Because there is that. Again, it's a bit of a, or is it a misnomer or not? But the idea that, you know, you've got to sell the family home to pay for the holding deposit for these facilities, but there are a variety of options, which we're just about to go into, that can cater for different needs and different levels, yeah. So what can some of these different types of payment options be for the aged care facilities?
Yeah. You know, a lot of people often worry about how they can afford full-time care, but there are always ways around it, depending on your loved one's individual circumstances. Again, I keep saying it like it always comes back to the individual because that's literally what it is.
Yeah.
At, you know, Aged Care Ready, we don't actually offer financial advice, but we strongly recommend that clients see a financial advisor because it is such a big investment that has greater effects on things like your pension, the longevity of your care, but then also the protection of the estate once that person passes away. But in a nutshell, aged care can be funded through either paying a RAD, which is a refundable accommodation deposit, or that big lump sum of money that people pay, or by a DAP, which is a daily accommodation payment. Now, you can think of these similar to buying versus renting a home. So a RAD is refundable to the estate once that person passes away, whereas a DAP is more like renting. So it's dead money. Okay. You don't get that money back.
Yeah.
And facilities charge interest on both of these options. Mm-hmm. But there are also other options for those who don't actually have the means to afford the accommodation costs. And again, that's where a financial advisor would really help in this situation. But outside of these costs, there are also other costs like a basic daily fee, and everybody going into aged care legally needs to pay that despite their means. And that is set and determined by the government. At the moment, it's equal to 85% of the single person's pension. So as of today, it was indexed last on the 20th of March, it's $54.69 per day.
Yeah.
And like I said, everybody in aged care has to actually pay that. Mm-hmm. And then there's also
does that include like, food, or does that just include just the accommodation?
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got your accommodation costs,
yeah,
and then these daily payments are meant to go towards things like food, heating, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then there's also extra services fees and means tested fees as well.
Okay.
So it sounds very expensive, and it is.
Yeah.
It's just how you structure that.
Yeah. And as you said, get a financial advisor on your side to work out the best for your situation. Now, I believe some aged care facilities are very adamant that their fees are not negotiable, but mm-hmm. I believe you're able to do these things.
Yes, absolutely. So some fees are negotiable, some aren't. The RADs or the refundable deposit are, and the extra services fees are completely negotiable. It really depends what leverage you have, though, with the facility. For example, if there's one bed available, which you have applied for your family member, but there's also another family who's also applied for that bed, you don't really have a lot of leverage.
Yeah.
So on the flip side, if there was three beds available and only one family, then you have a lot more leverage to work with. Yeah. Extra services fees, I think, is the biggest point of contention, because facilities often market them as being non-negotiable. However, you really have to look at what these extra services are and if your family member has the ability to actually utilize that.
Okay.
So, for example, one of our clients last year was legally blind, mm-hmm. and she had no cognitive capacity. So things like Foxtel, newspapers and wine were not appropriate for her. And the facilities that I had toured for this lady, one of them actually said that the extra services fees weren't negotiable, even though she couldn't utilize these services.
Yeah.
And if, you know, she didn't utilize them, then one of the other residents would. And that doesn't actually fit in with what's called consumer-directed care, which is what aged care is all about. Mm-hmm. So they were saying the wrong thing in that point. But yeah, absolutely, RADs and the extra services fees are negotiable.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, it's interesting that, you know, they'd actually add wine as an extra service. That wouldn't be part of the food and beverage side of things.
Well, some facilities even consider extra services fees, or they try to charge the extra services fees for a second meal option, which is actually standard under the quality standards. So yeah, some of them are a bit naughty in trying to get around that.
If you want beef or chicken and they're only offering beef, having that second option,
they're trying to justify the extra services fees to offer that second option when that second option is actually a legal requirement.
Yeah, that's wrong. So what other things could be extra services? Like, obviously, like that have entertainers, I guess, coming in?
So entertainers, extra lifestyle and leisure activities or outings, that sort of thing. And sometimes the extra services fees cover things like extra coffee from the cafe if they have one on site, or hairdressing or beauty spa appointments and that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, I was actually driving down Beach Road yesterday and I saw two elderly people in a converted bike thing. So they were sitting in the bike like those Thailand sort of bike things, and there was two people with obviously council workers or whatever they were, with bright green high-vis kind of tops on, just riding these elderly people, and they look like, you know, they had their blankets on their lap and they probably just wanted to get some fresh air. But it was, you know, nice to see that.
That's cute. I like
it. Yeah, there was just two of them doing their thing down there. Now, how quickly do rooms or self-contained units become available, and also how quickly do they get to be snapped up?
Yeah. Look, availability comes in ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
More often than not, there's a lot of pressure being put on the families to make a decision quickly. Mm-hmm. But we always recommend to take a step back, take your time to make that decision.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, important to remember that if you need to take that time to make a decision, then take it. Another room will be available sooner or later. And in the interim, you can utilize things like respite in a different facility or even permanent placement in another facility. And then when a bed becomes available, you can actually move.
Yeah.
So don't be pressured into making a decision today. At least take a night to sleep on it, because availability comes and goes really rapidly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of kind of the industry, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how do most residents adjust to the aged care way of life? Like, we talked about the settling period, obviously 4 to 6 weeks. But, you know, are they kind of happy? Like, do you think their personalities sort of pep up once they're in there?
Yeah. Absolutely, especially if they're really needing that care and they weren't receiving what they needed at home. Mm-hmm. They tend to really flourish in the right facility. So because they're receiving the right care, one example of this, and I'm going back to the weight loss example, but when they go into a home, they're getting 3 meals a day plus 3 snacks a day as well, you know. They're being made sure that they're actually finishing their meals. They're being reviewed by dietitians and they're being weighed regularly. So with the right facility, residents tend to flourish in care. They're socially supported. They're clean. They've got food, like I said, and they're making friends.
And the reality is their life's probably going to be elongated because they're happier.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, a lot of people don't realize that in aged care facilities they have access to physios as well. And they will often see physiotherapists, qualified physiotherapists, up to 4 times a week.
Wow.
So that's improving their mobility. It's a much better quality of life, if you ask me.
Yeah, oh definitely. You know, I think you and I both are now waiting to
My name's already on a wait list.
Is it? Now, with the pandemic, how have they changed their processes? Obviously, we've got to go in with masks and stuff, do we, or not?
Yeah. So obviously we've seen changes in the infection control processes.
Yeah.
And as per the government recommendations, masks need to be worn by everybody, including staff and visitors. The residents themselves, if they live there, they don't have to, because that's their home, obviously. The shields are a recommendation. They're not mandatory, whereas the masks are mandatory still. And then it really comes down to the facility themselves and what their processes are around rapid testing.
Yeah.
Some facilities are still rapid testing everybody that comes in. Some people aren't testing anybody. They're just screening them with the temperatures and, you know, the checklist questions of COVID exposure. Prior to the pandemic, the quality standards were changed. Now, the quality standards are, I guess, the set of rules that every aged care facility has to abide by. So when they are audited by the quality agency or the government, that's what they're held accountable to. Now, in 2019, these were changed to have a more consumer-directed care focus, meaning that each resident was at the center of their care, and it came down to more options, more choices, and living as the resident would want to live in their own home. So we started seeing a lot more home-style models of care. So that means smaller units, central kitchens where residents could help with the preparation of meals, laundries in these little wings as well, so that they felt more like they were living in a small home rather than as part of a large clinical facility, I guess. However, when COVID hit, I think the priority kind of went to more a task-based focus, which is what it was before the quality standards changed. And understandably, because it was quite regimented, we had a lot of rules that had to be followed and strict policies around lockdowns and outbreaks and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how facilities re-emerge again, having to do that for the second time since 2019 from a very routine-based, task-orientated-based system to going back to more of a home-style model of care.
It's interesting how, it's all... It's played a massive part in the whole thing, Now, how long can the process take from showing interest to moving in? Like, obviously, you know, you've got your parents in their 70s or maybe 80s and you see those signs. So from the sort of seeing the signs to, it's how long is a piece of string, isn't it? But
it is. It really is.
Yeah.
And, again, it also depends on the individual. So. We always recommend starting the conversation early, and I know that it's no easy feat. Like, it is really difficult, especially if they're adamant that they will never go into care. However, what you need to make them realize is that if you don't have this conversation and get their input while they can still give the input, that decision can be taken away from them really, really quickly. And what we see is, the families that come to us that are completely distraught because mum or dad have had a fall, they've broken a hip, they're in hospital, and then they can't go home. So that decision is ripped away from them and they haven't had that conversation up to that point. And the hospital is pushing them to be discharged, and then the pressure is being put on them to find a facility. So I guess when you ask how long can a process take, it depends on the situation. In that hospital situation, we can place somebody within 24 hours. We always place somebody in respite first so that we can take our time, pump the brakes, and find the right facility for a permanent placement. But generally, when somebody's ready to go into care and they're coming from home, it will usually take between 2 and 3 weeks.
So that's not forever, but, you know, as it's starting that conversation. Now, can I move my parent from one facility to another? So we've already talked about the fact that you can, in different stages, change from one facility to another. But if they, if they've got this, you know, we've put the deposit down, the RAD down, and we've put the massive deposit down, can we change our parent from one facility to another if they're not happy, or do they?
Absolutely. So they're never just locked in. Although they're signing a contract, that contract is essentially to ensure that the home care, the provider, so the aged care facility gets paid, but also that the resident themselves or the client has what's called security of tenure, meaning that they can't be asked to leave or they can't be kicked out just because. So they can move facility. We have assisted with this in the past where, you know, we'd had clients that weren't happy with the facility that they had been placed in by their family and then they wanted to move, or, you know, they had a loved one who moved away and they wanted to go with them, that sort of thing. In that contract, you will find the stipulations around this, and usually it's a 7 or 14 day notice period. One thing I would check, and again, I'm not a lawyer, but in the contracts, before you sign the contracts, make sure you have a good understanding of what their clauses say about the refund of the RAD. And how long they have to pay that, because some facilities can be a little bit naughty and extend that out to, you know, 6-12 months when it should actually be paid relatively quickly because they have access to it.
So,
usually you only have to give 7 or 14 days notice.
Okay, cool. Why is it so important to ask how aged care advisors, whether it's placement agents, financial planners, solicitors, et cetera, get paid?
Look, I think this comes down to where their loyalties lie. So, for example, we don't take commissions or kickbacks from facilities that we place into. Other people do. And I know in the financial sector, when they went through the Royal Commission that they went through a few years ago, a lot of financial advisors had to restructure their commissions and the way they got paid and that sort of thing. And I feel that that's probably not far off where placement agents will be in the next few years. I think there will be some sort of governance there.
Yes.
But also when you're paying a fee for service, that is essentially ensuring that that person is working for you. That they have no vested interest in the outcome, and they're actually advocating for you and have your best interests at heart.
Yeah, it is really important, and it is good to see that the government is legislating against things like this, but it hasn't filtered through to every sector of the community yet, has it?
Not yet.
I think there's a big thing about childcare and aged care because they're basically two extremes of the same system, aren't they? There is a bit of a struggle to know when you're being ripped off or not, because they're the vulnerable times of your life, you know, aren't they?
And they
should be put
with that, just making sure that your advisor, whoever that may be, is actually qualified to be giving that advice. You know, I'm going to use the financial planner example here, where, you know, yes, they have to have their degrees now. It's not just a certificate. However, if you're getting aged care advice from a financial planner, make sure that they are aged care accredited, because there is a very big difference between a financial planner who says they can do aged care but don't do it on a daily basis compared to an aged care financial planner who just does aged care, because the legislation and the loopholes are changing on a daily basis. So it's really important that you're getting the best value and making sure you're protecting your assets and your future with somebody who actually knows what they're doing.
Yeah. Sound advice here. Thank you so much, Naomi. Well, thanks so much, Naomi, for taking us through the journey of organising aged care. It is a difficult decision for families, and you've really given our listeners a more educated understanding of the process. So thanks again.
You're welcome.
Now, how can listeners get in touch with you if they want to talk about their loved one with you?
Yeah. So we're offering complimentary discovery calls with myself. You can give us a call on 1300 023 589, or find us at www.agedcareready.com.au.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, Naomi, and we'll have all your details in our show notes and also on our social media. Now, next week we have part two of our aged care episode, where we have one of Naomi's families talking about their journey in putting their father into aged care. So if you're going through the process or think you might need to go through the process soon, it's a great episode to see it from the client side, so don't miss it. Real Estate Right is produced by Real Copyright, one of Melbourne's leading real estate copywriting companies, and is written, hosted and produced by me, Sue Langada, with the support of my production and social media assistant, Lisa Fisher. All information given on this podcast is a guide only and delivered to help you understand the intricacies that can happen in real estate. We recommend that you get professional advice that is designed for your own personal circumstances.
We would like to thank Podbean for hosting this podcast, Premium Beat for their music, Francis Morello for his voiceover, and Zoom for the recording. If you have a real estate story that is inspiring or a great how-to tip, please contact Lisa on 5977-8889 to find out how you can be a guest on Real Estate Right in 2022. If you would like to know more about our copywriting services, please email Lisa at orders@realcopyright.com.au. Thank you for listening to Real Estate Right. It's where buyers, sellers, renters, and investors get their real estate right.